You're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio.
We need to understand as human beings that we are part of this ecosystem.
We are nature.
In the forest.
I teach many people, you know, don't cut the trees.
Through their roots because of the relationship they have with living microorganisms.
They do lots of really important things in our ecosystems.
And there are cycles, natural rhythms, this planet that we're so interconnected with.
We really need help. The Amazon really need help.
I'm a shaman almost 50 years.
The indigenous need our help. They need our help now.
Medicine.
Wild Botanic Garden. It's actually floodproof, bombproof and radiation proof as well.
There's young people out here that are doing amazing things, and the press needs to fix up and start telling some really beautiful stories.
We can always make a difference.
We be the change.
Plant trees, they help us breathe.
Hello, my name is Yara. You're listening to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in today. On today's show, I'll be interviewing a lady named Shelley, and Shelley is part of a movement called Edenkind. Edenkind is a startup non-profit company seeking to pioneer sustainable and practical solutions which reduce greenhouse gas emissions through innovative community grow projects and educational courses that encourage empathy and increased awareness of the consequences of our modern day actions. You can find out more about Edenkind via the website, which is www.edenkind.org.
But the earth is our mother. And we are just abusing and wrecking her.
Edenkind is dedicated to addressing the issues surrounding the climate crisis and the cognitive dissonance that is prohibiting the changes we urgently need to make to help save the earth, our species, from mass extinction.
If we don't stand, who will? How much money do these companies need to make? When is enough enough?
Edenkind's vision is to grow together in all senses, from creating community farms that grow vegan, organic food, to planting trees together, to evolving into more empathetic beings that become custodians of our planet, seeking to protect it and end harmful practices that no longer serve us or our future generations. Growing, preserving, cooking, and eating healthy, vegan, organic whole food together is a major part of the Edenkind innovative vision, which also includes creating a flagship vegan eco-village with a permaculture farm and edible forests to attract wildlife, supporting and sponsoring independent growers and community growing schemes, assisting with the creation of vegan organic community farms, and planting native trees and hedges. So thank you so much for tuning in to the Environment and Conservation Show. If you are interested in being interviewed for the show, please connect. You can connect with me via the Wild Eye Adventures website. Just go to www.wildeyeadventures.com or connect via social media platforms. So I hope you enjoy the interview with Shelley from Edenkind, and thanks so much for tuning in.
Peace!
Positive
energy,
activity,
constant
elevation.
Welcome to the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. Shelley, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. So can you just please introduce yourself to the listeners and tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're working on at the moment, please?
So I'm Shelley, and on Facebook, I'm Shelley Beach Griffiths, and I am one of the directors at Edenkind, which is a non-profit organisation. And to summarise it as neatly as possible, I'd say it's about growing and evolving. So it's a mixture of growing our own food and tackling food sovereignty and self-sustainability and our carbon footprint, and also personal growth. So one of the main aims is to tackle cognitive dissonance and encourage people to change the way they live.
And I understand you run some educational courses as well that people can get involved with. Is that correct?
We plan to. We've got a course that we're going to be piloting on a group of willing sort of beta testers, we're calling them, because guinea pigs isn't really an appropriate phrase for a vegan organisation. So beta testers, we're going to be doing that this summer and then tweaking it, and then we'll be rolling that out at sunset at the end of summer.
So what is like the ultimate vision for Edenkind then, Shelley, please?
I would say it's just to get everybody to grow their own food together as communities, whether that's in the countryside and people turn grazing fields into edible forests, or if it's in urban spaces where parkland, some of it's given over to community or unused spaces to grow their own food and growing it together. So it's like community supported agriculture. It's not a new thing. We're just jumping on the bandwagon and putting our own slant on it, which is also encouraging people to look at other areas of their life, not just their food, on where they could perhaps evolve and be better people, making better choices for the planet, I think.
That word community is something that many of us seek these days. Like the world that we've been born into, this urban environment, this system of nonstop economic growth, it almost seems like for thousands of years, you know, humans dwelled with nature, they worked with the land. But since the Industrial Revolution has come in, we've been separated from nature and separated from the land. And I think since lockdown, people are like feeling more in tune to nature now, and they're seeking out community and growing their own food. So I think it's wonderful that you lot are pushing these initiatives forward. So what projects are you working on, particularly at the moment on the lands?
So we've got a small micro farm in Ceredigion, which is probably only about 10 minutes away from the sea. So it's a really lovely spot for volunteers. We often do an afternoon at the farm and then head for the beach and have a campfire. And last summer, we were blessed with dolphins jumping over the water in front of sunsets with our volunteers that all helped us grow food. It's a small plot and we only grow a few things there, but it's almost like a starter for people to come and practice growing vegetables and taming the land and using permaculture techniques so that we don't do too much work. We've got a really nice balance between working the land and regenerating and exploring and playing music and just basically being in nature. So the farm is, I would say, very basic with just a caravan and a fire pit and hopefully soon a new barn. So that's the firm haylog, that's the micro farm. And then we've just secured a 36 acre valley, a whole valley with ancient woodland, lots of pasture lands, streams running through it. It's just exquisitely beautiful. It's already an Eden, but previous owners kept a lot of the pastures as sort of mown silage meadows, really. And we're going to be reforesting nearly all of it, leaving a few open spaces here and there just to be able to gather or camp. But the majority of it's going to be rewilded. And we have a grant from the Woodland Trust to plant 420 trees this autumn. And we've added to that with our own sort of tree fundraising. We're going to be planting 1,000 trees this winter. So that's very exciting.
That's fantastic that you've got the Woodland Trust to support you. I mean, they're very supportive with landowners looking to reforest the lands, aren't they?
They are. And we were really pleased that even though they can only award 420, they've recommended we apply for the next round of grants to get another 420 and just keep applying for each time they open it up again. So we're just going to keep planting trees here. And we also have other people that have loaned us land. So we have a chap who has a campsite and a 70-foot self-watering polytunnel. So we oversee helping a community come together to grow things there. And then there's other projects where we put locals in touch with the landowners and let them get on with it themselves. So, and we step back. So there's a lot of that going on as well.
It's really nice that you're getting the community involved, because we lack that interaction with the natural world in our everyday lives. And I guess it starts with your personal relationship to the environment and to nature, and to nurture your personal relationship. And when you see people coming to your lands, what positive transitions are you seeing happening with the people?
Oh, it's such a healing space, whether it's just getting your hands in the dirt and growing things, because I think there's something ancestral and spiritual about using your hands that way. It's almost like we've forgotten how to shell peas, but it's just all there, almost like a muscle memory. So just getting in the soil is really good for you. There's all sorts of, I think, antimicrobials and things that you get from doing things like that, that cure depression and help with anxiety, just being there doing that. But that aside, coming and just being in the space at Cwm Caradog, which is translates from Welsh as kind valley, just being here and listening to the birds and being under the trees and the babbling brooks, it's incredibly healing.
The whole philosophy, right, of the Environment and Conservation Show pushes forward that humans are nature, and you know what we're doing to nature is going to ultimately affect human health. And like you said, it's got those, you know, antidepressive microbes that are found in the soil. It's actually good for you. It just shows how connected to nature humans are. It's really fascinating.
Yes, it is. And it's lovely to see people come here. And we do, by the very nature of the fact that we take volunteers that are sort of looking for places to put their head down at night, we do attract a few people that are in transitional stages in their life, and coming here and being in nature, helping grow vegetables, being part of the community, talking things through with other people. A lot of people come to us without a direction and then know what they want to do when they leave, which is always really lovely. I mean, we're often quite sad they do leave, but we see that quite a lot of people coming to us a little bit broken and leaving a whole lot happier. Just being here is incredible.
It sounds absolutely beautiful, like when you describe the land, and just to be in that space and just to tune into your environment. We're encouraged to rush, and there's a lot of, you know, everyday pressures going on, and I guess monkey mind, that's what the Buddhists would call it anyway. So to get away from that and tune into nature, it does something to your psyche, it does something to your brain, your physical health, because we are nature, aren't we, initially?
Absolutely. That's lovely. Yes.
So are you always looking for volunteers throughout the year, or is it specific times in the year, and can people come and join at any point in time?
Yes, absolutely. So we've got a nice routine going now where Mondays we go to the micro farm and we try to get people together to sort of blast the work and get it all done as a group. So Mondays, and on nice days we have a campfire at the end. There we can take van dwelling volunteers. So we often get people that come for like a 3-day park up, and we only ask an hour a day volunteering to come and park up. So if someone comes and helps us for an afternoon, has a nice meal with us, they get to stay there for another, you know, for 3 days, for two more nights, and enjoy the beaches and going off. So it's a nice kind of gentle come and have a go at farming and then go and do your own thing. And that's always available. We have a caravan there that is almost like a sort of community kitchen. So it's a place where people, if they're camping, they can still come and cook, and there's a little kitchen and a little seating area if it's raining. So that's quite cute. Wednesdays we open up the gate to Cwm Caradog and allow people to come in here, but as yet we're not really encouraging van dwellers or people to camp over. It's very much organized activities of, okay, today we're planting out the kale, and we get a bunch of people in to help us do that. And then until recently we were doing lots of volunteers at the house in the village where we people were helping with the polytunnel, and we've got quite a big permaculture kitchen garden there, which is incredible in itself, all the food that's we've grown in the 2 years that we've lived there. But we're selling the house now, so we're winding down on taking volunteers in the house.
Because it's very like inspiring hearing all of this, you know, because it's about community power, I believe.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with ZeroZilchZip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit ZeroZilchZip.co.uk. or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It's like this conflict of ideologies going on. You've got the big boys at the top and their language is, you know, profit, growth, economic development. And it seems to be this runaway train just eating at nature and the environment. And in a sense, they're completely cut off from the environment and natural world, which is a bit troubling for those of us that are highly in tune to nature and the environment and wildlife. And I feel that, you know, the movement is coming from the people, from the ground, from grassroots. And
it's challenging capitalism. I mean, this is partly why I ended up doing this. Is I had a business that I had a wholesale company, and I had a member of staff really keen to grow the business. And eventually she got so frustrated with me not wanting to do her ideas to grow the business that she kind of shouted, "What kind of businesswoman are you that you don't want to grow your business?" And I said, "I'm not a capitalist. I'm not looking to grow the business. It's working very well as it is. I don't want to work any harder. If it's not broken, why fix it?" And she couldn't get her head round why I wouldn't want to grow a business. And it reminds me of that story about the fisherman sitting by the bank, watching the waves, enjoying the nice sunny weather. And a man comes along and says, hey, is that your fishing boat out there? And why aren't you out fishing? You could be earning more money. And he says, "Well, you know, I'd have to employ more staff. I'd have to do this. And what would I do? I've got everything I need now." And he's like, "Well, if you had more boats, you could have more money. And then you could be like me and have time to, you know, have time to do what you want." And he said, "What do you think I'm doing? Sitting there looking at the sea. You don't have to have loads of money to come and sit in nature. You don't have to employ loads of people to give yourself time off from work. You just have to sit and think about what really matters and what you really need, and just earn enough money to pay for what you need, because actually a lot of what you need is free. If you're prepared to just come and connect with nature and learn what's edible and try to grow things and join communities so that you don't all need to have a mower, or you don't all need to have your own equipment for everything. Everyone's got these little boxes of units with everything you need. And, you know, we don't need to share, like, for example, washing machines. I would happily share a little laundry area with four or five of my neighbours and not all have our own washing machines. So little things like that, just challenging what we've got and sharing it and getting out in nature and being more time rich and not having all the gadgets. I think we've been tricked into thinking we need all these things, and we don't need them.
You know, honestly, like the other day, I was thinking to myself, back in the 80s and the 90s, it wasn't like this. Like, I just feel sometimes it can just be overwhelming, or a lot of the time it can be overwhelming, all these emails and voicemails and this. It never used to be like this, you know. And when we were younger, we saw us being funneled into this techno world. And, you know, I'm not dissing technology. Like, it's brought us fascinating. I'm talking to you right now via technology. Like, it's brought us great things, but we've got to a point now where it's like our lives are fully dependent on it, and they're designed to be addictive as well. We're always on the go with our appliances now, and we're not realizing the impact it's having on mental health for young people, for example. You know,
it stops young people experiencing boredom. That people are not just young people, anyone. I think I've had to overcome a bit of a phone addiction when I realized how much time I was spending looking at a screen. It's instant stimulation, instant gratification, and it means you don't have to experience boredom. But boredom's really important for creativity. You don't have great ideas unless you're sitting there doing nothing, thinking of random things for ideas to come to you. You don't have great creative ideas if you're sitting looking at Facebook. So I think it's important that people get off their phones, and it's almost like we've become a nation of zombies or looking at screens. It does feel a little bit like a zombie apocalypse, except people don't realize they're zombies. So yeah, we kind of want to shake things up and say to people, get off your phones. We were even talking yesterday about having a little entry shed by the gate at Cwm Caradog and having some lockers in there and saying to people, put your phone in the locker. and just go out without your phone. Try it. My problem would be is I've got a great camera on my phone, so I like to photograph things, but it's a nice idea.
And a lot of these skills that you talk about, you know, like permaculture and growing food and trading, like these things have been done for thousands of years by many different cultures around the world. It is possible to exist on Earth without being so destructive towards the natural world. It is possible. And, you
absolutely.
Know, people are finding these possibilities through community, through working together. Be the change you wish to see.
That's lovely.
As you were saying before, you know, when you're getting your hands in the dirt, when you're out in nature, this is uplifting your vibration and eating that fresh food that's been organically grown.
And also understanding a little bit about food, because nature is really far more miraculous than people realize. So one of the things that we're doing at Edenkind is collecting seeds, because once you have up to, I think it's the fourth generation, by the time you get to the fourth generation seed, so you've planted it, you've let a certain amount go to seed, you collected it, you planted that the next year, and you do that for a couple of years, those seeds have become perfectly acclimatized to your area and resistant to all sorts of things. So they just get stronger and stronger, but they also act as a perfect detox for your environment. So the more people understand how magical and medicinal locally grown organic food can be, we just need to let people know. And I think more people would do it. If they realize the benefits, they would do it.
It's interesting that you say that, because like our world, we're being like subjected to probably about 5,000 to 8,000 adverts per day, right? Telling you what to think. But we walk past trees and plants every day that are actually wild foods and wild medicines. And yet,
I know,
right? Because we're like, you know, we're distracted almost by all this like fake noise coming at us. And the simple, beautiful dandelion. The advert tells you it's a weed to kill it, but actually it's a medicinal plant. In reality, yeah. It's superfood.
Yes, absolutely.
Again, it's that false information coming at you, but it's just tuning your awareness, I suppose. And when you tune your awareness into nature, something amazing happens to your psyche.
The more you can immerse yourself into nature, like get away from where humans are, the more likelihood there is that you will meet some kind of creature or bird or something you've not seen before. And it's like the euphoria that comes with that, having seen something. Like one of our volunteers saw a kingfisher here at Cwmcaradog a couple of days ago, and she was so excited. It was so magical for her. And then people go away with that really positive experience. So we just need to get out and mindfully observe what's going on and take note. I mean, that's the other thing. I've been blown away recently by the amount of laburnum trees that are around here. There's so many that like whole hedgerows have just gone into yellow, beautiful hanging lanterns like some kind of Japanese film set. I can't believe I never noticed them before. And it's like, I've always known what a laburnum was, but to miss them in all the hedgerows, not looking, I feel like my eyes have been opened and I need to take note when we're driving places, look at the hedgerows, look what's going on and pay attention everywhere you go, because it's exquisite all around us if we pay attention.
So true, Shelley. It's like the deeper you look, the more you will find. Just the other day, I was looking at a pepper, right? I cut this pepper in half and I was looking at the inside of this pepper and I was looking at all the abundant seeds. And then it made me think, you know, when you incorporate sustainability and permaculture, there can be enough for everyone just if we adapt our ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And encouraging a circular economy so that it's not that we start recycling things. We use everything, so there isn't a waste to have to work out what do we do with this. And a circular economy where we don't waste seeds, where everything gets used again, it's a great way of being. And I think also we're heading towards that circular economy with people swapping more. The more we go into a cashless society, that it's going to force more people to start trading and swapping. And I think that's a very positive thing that might come out of what's going mad with the world at the moment, is it's pushing people to think differently on how they're going to deal with each other and interact with each other and do business with each other. And also encouraging people to think of more ecological ways to do their businesses. So not buying the cheapest option in from China and selling it, but actually looking at local people making things and being willing to pay that little bit extra because you know you're supporting a local person and a local business. Whereas we're of the mindset at the moment that you've got to get the best bargain you can. And it's a very selfish way of looking at things, of what's in it for yourself. We need to start looking at what have we got here that's abundant and who can I share it with? So I think that's the main thing that we are trying to push forward, is notice what's around you and try and share it with everyone around you if you can. So a lot of people that we know have had No Mow May. Did you hear about that?
Yeah. Movement. Where people don't mow their lawns in May, for sure.
Yeah, so just mowing pathways through. So where we've moved to, the owners next door have obviously worked really hard for a long time, keeping their meadows all mown and not letting it go. And we've sort of talked about rewilding, and it's been delightful to see a whole field has been left now just to go wild. And it's lovely to see it kind of spreading and more people doing things. The more we communicate and big up the people doing it, I think the more appealing it will be to everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And sometimes it's not about waiting for higher powers to sort it out. I think we're going to be waiting from now until the end of time, you know. So it's about people power. When you can tune into that, it's very empowering, actually, that all of these things, they empower you, don't they? Our way of being now, it's quite dependent, right? It keeps you coming back. It keeps you coming back. It's a very, and at the same time, you know, exploiting the natural world. But these things that you're teaching, like with the permaculture and growing food, they all empower you. And it's amazing what you can do as well with a small space when you put your mind.
Yes, very much so. Anyone can grow food, even if it's just microgreens on your windowsill. Everyone can have a go and do something. And it's a feel-good factor as well. If you plant something and you see it grow and then you eat it, it just feels like that's how it's supposed to be. It gives you some kind of alignment with our existence here rather than being caught up in the rat race. It connects you with something that I think we're supposed to do. We're supposed to grow our own food. We're supposed to know what the trees are and what the plants are. So I think we will be getting back to that. I think it might take a few food shortages and Brexit nightmares to continue for people to start going, hang on a minute, I can grow my own radishes dead easy, and just it catch on and everyone start doing it. So we'll see. It feels like a bit to me, but of course I'm mixing with people that share my view on the climate crisis. But to me, it feels like there's a wartime effort beginning now. Like in the war, people gave up their lawns and grew veg for the community. It feels like we're heading that direction. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's like panic of crikey, what do we do if, is having a bit of a positive influence on people taking to growing their own food. We have a plant station outside our house in the village, and I can't bear waste. So a lot of gardeners, they recommend when you grow a whole bunch of seedlings, you take the ones you need and you compost the rest. I just can't do that. We've been potting everything on and putting it out the front of the house. So half the village now have our dwarf tomatoes. And that's how it should be. We should just be all growing food and having a go and enjoying it. And so hopefully lots more people will do that. People have been inspired by the plant station, said, oh, I'm so doing this, and putting plants out the front of their house. So
it's so lovely to like find free plants just there. It's so humbling.
Yes. It's a really nice thing to do. And if people, even though I've not put a money box there, it's not an honesty box buying situation. It's a take it for free, have it. People still keep trying to put money through our letterbox.
Oh, bless them. Bless those people.
Which is very sweet. But I get most excited when people come along and they put their own other plants out the front. So it's for everybody to come and do their own plant swap. So when I get home today, if someone's gone and put a whole bunch of brassicas on there to be taken, it's such a good feeling. And if I go home and all the tomatoes I've put out have gone, that's an amazing feeling. So yeah, people need to do that and have the amazing feeling as well. It's a good way to live.
It's an amazing feeling. I mean, you've tapped on it quite a few times during this discussion, you know, where like that whole connection and your relationship to the natural world, it's all a positive exchange of energy, and everything in nature is an exchange of energy. Growing that seed and watching it grow and giving your energy to its growth, that tomato then grows its vibrancy, and one day it returns that energy back to you like a positive transaction. A lot of the food that we're eating these days doesn't have much nutrition in it. It's almost like we're eating just to get full these days, but not eating for the nutritional benefits. But people are engaging more into that now, and you feel the difference within yourself, you know, like energetically, like food most of the time these days, it's making you feel bloated and sluggish and tired and grunt. I mean, food is actually supposed to do the exact opposite, right? It's supposed to give you energy and make you feel vibrant. And, you know, that is what's happening with all of this organically grown food.
Yeah. And also, I think what people don't consider in that equation is wild food. We have an abundance everywhere in the UK of stinging nettles, and they have far more nutrition than spinach. They're abundant. You don't, if you've got them in your garden, don't get rid of them. Just harvest them, cut them down. They'll grow back again. And all those lovely green shoots at the top, they make great tea. They make really good replacement. Any dish that you'd normally have spinach, put the nettles in, it works really well. And that's just one thing. There's so many other abundant wild food. Everyone kind of is culturally accustomed to going blackberry picking. We just need to extend that to look, it's not just blackberries. There's all this other food, all these other medicines, all these other amazing things that you could be collecting and putting in your diet. And it's local. It's, you know, it's not taking any pesticides or herbicides, it's just grown wild for you there. So I think there should be more people, I'd say mindfully foraging, because we need to leave enough for it to feed the birds, and we need to leave enough for the plants to keep regenerating. So where there's an abundance, go and help yourself. And if there's only a little bit, have a little sort of chat with yourself of whether or not you should take it. Because I think when people start understanding all the free food that's out there, people might not be as mindful as they could be about making sure that the ecosystem keeps its balance.
Thank you very much for raising that very, very important point, because, you know, there's a lot of us in the city side. And when you're not mindfully foraging, that can have a really bad impact on the ecosystem. Like I see, for example, a lot of silver birch trees that have been over foraged, you know, where they've taken the bark off to the, you know, the dark part of the tree. Yeah. Right. It stops the sugars flowing. So to have hundreds and thousands of people foraging irresponsibly, it's probably not going to be a good thing. So thank you so much for raising that awareness.
Oh, you're welcome.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip, because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I think one of the other things people should know about foraging as well is one of the best things to do in autumn or when things have gone to seed is to forage for seeds, because actually then you're helping nature. If you go and get the seeds and you spread those somewhere else and grow them somewhere else, as well as perhaps being part of our diet, because seeds are so good for us. And there's lots and lots out there that are such good medicine. Even nettle seeds, if you were to collect, female nettle seeds are the ones to collect. And there's a way of being able to tell the difference, but they are so full of goodness. And they're so abundant that you, as long as you, if you're clearing a patch, you don't necessarily pull out the roots, you just cut them so they can come again. And then you can have an abundance of seeds and you can spread those in other places. At the moment, we've got an abundance of bluebells that have now all gone to seed. So we're just waiting for them to go a sort of a crispy yellow, and then we're ready to go and collect the seeds. And then we're going to go and put bluebells in places where it's all looking a bit barren and just help nature a little bit. So I think foraging for yourself is one thing, but we can also do kind of guerrilla foraging where we're helping nature spread with the plants that are good for the soil.
I love that you just brought up seeds again, because that was actually what I was about to bring up again with you, Shelley, about seeds. So I've been growing peppers for, you know, every year I like to grow peppers. But for the last 2 years, I've been having an issue growing peppers because apparently something's happened to the seeds now, like they've been genetically modified to not reproduce. And that's something that's occurring around the world now, right, where the corporation is stopping the seed from reproducing. You know, there's campaigns going on all over the world. It might be a bit silent here, but
it's commonplace. Yeah, absolutely. The supermarkets making sure that what you buy is pretty much barren, so the seeds are no good. But the simple way to get around that is not to buy from the supermarkets, to go to your local organic farmer and buy direct from them and use those seeds. That's the way around it, or to make sure that you buy heirloom seeds where it's not been genetically modified. But I have to say that even if you try to be puritanical about your seeds, unless you're keeping them in a sterile environment and choosing what cross-pollinates with your plants, nature will have its way in changing what you've got anyway. So unless you're trying to sort of grow a specific type of produce that has to be pure, I'm all for seeing what happens when you just plant things out and then plant the seeds on. I mean, you know about if you want an apple tree, you can't expect to get the same apple from the seed that you have taken from the apple, because it will have, you don't know what it pollinated with to create that seed, so you're not going to get the same apple tree. So one of the things that we're going to learn how to do is grafting, so that what happens is that you grow your apple tree, and then you take a limb from the apple tree that you know is the right apple that you're trying to grow, and you graft it onto the root ball, and then you get exactly the apple tree you want. But the other thing about grafting is, you see, the Victorians planted all these wonderful trees in our cities, but they were all ornamental. They weren't fruit bearing trees. But there's a whole load of people that are doing guerrilla grafting. So they're taking nut bearing and fruit bearing trees and grafting, splicing and grafting them onto these barren trees, and then they become fruit bearing trees. And I think that's an incredible skill that we could perhaps all get into and start making trees everywhere in cities, food trees. That would be a really amazing thing to do.
You know, again, power to the people on that. That's fantastic. And have you ever heard of an organization called Hempen that has the only hemp field? I think it's near Reading in the UK.
Right. No, I don't know them.
Because hemp is actually, you know, it originates from the nettle family as well. So you can make cotton and paper and cordage and clothing and medicine and plastic, biodegradable plastic. I mean, for example, if we were farming hemp instead of cutting down trees, and it actually grows a lot faster than trees, and it's sustainable, and the ways are out there, and it's about the people. Like, if more and more of us did these things, you know, then we're creating a new reality, Shelley, I believe.
Yeah, that would be great. Hemp is a fantastic product. And funnily enough, in history, there was a time where every farmer had to, by royal decree, grow hemp, because it was used to make sails and ropes and for the explorers. And the crown wanted everybody to grow hemp, but it got demonized. And unfortunately, even now, I think you have to have licenses and you're only allowed to grow it to a certain point in its life cycle. And it needs to be made so that people understand the difference between the varieties that people grow to have the THC and a really amazing product that actually absorbs 4 times as much carbon dioxide as a young forest does. So, you know, it's quite an important product. I think in one harvest, in the same space, one harvest in one season produces the same amount of paper as a forest that's taken something like 20 years to grow.
The power of plants.
Yeah.
Tune in to their power. Sometimes I almost feel like the plants are communicating with us, you know, urging us to evolve if we actually listen to them. You know, they're speaking to us all the time. And there's communications going on, you know, right below our feet that we've just tapped into in the last few years scientifically. You know, all those tree fungal network communications going on in the ancient ecosystems.
Absolutely. You need to get your shoes off and stand on the ground without any rubber soled or shoes or socks and just connect to the earth. Also, I think, although it sounds ridiculous and we're stereotyping ourselves here, literally hugging trees does do exactly the same thing as well. And you connect to something. And if you're willing to just stop and feel the benefits, it can make a really big difference to your mental health. We do grounding things here where, in fact, a volunteer today went on the walk around Cwmcaradyg barefoot because we've been mowing this path. It's now bramble free. People can walk around it completely barefoot and you're grounding the whole time you're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a proud tree hugger, Shelley.
Yeah. Are you?
It's earthing as well. Like what you're speaking about is earthing. It's the same as when you're in the ocean, you know, on the beach and breathing in those positive neurons or electrons in the air. It's the same when you're in the forest, breathing the phytoncides from the leaves. There's this chemical, it's scientific, it's spiritual, it's physical. You know, it's just the more of us engage into that feeling, I feel we can create those positive ripples. Going back to Eden Kind, Shelley, are there any kind of events going on in the future that people can get involved with, perhaps?
I think because we're taking a permaculture approach of working with, of looking what's going on with the land for at least four seasons, we're being quite low key with events this year. So the way to come and see what's going on here really is to volunteer. And then hopefully, I would say by next year, we will start mindfully hosting a couple of events here and there when we've sort of separated the land and sort of zoned it out so people know what the conservation areas are. And no dogs here, and this bit you can let your dog off to run around, and this bit here you can bathe here, but please not up there. We need to get all of this in place before we can actually host proper events. So yes, at the moment I would say the way in is through volunteering. But that said, we do quite a few things in the summer that involve campfires and all going to, there's a local pop-up restaurant that does lots of amazing food, veganish mum. So we often go together as a group and take a big table and go and have a big meal together, which is often a nice community thing to do. So there's things that people can always come and get involved with if they're here. But as for events, it's, I would say, next year.
But I suppose like when people come in and get involved with what's going on, it's a whole learning educational experience within itself, because there's so much to get involved with, the whole growing and permaculture and, you know, whatever's going on the land, people can learn from the experience.
Yes. And sometimes it does end up being something that I would have probably tried to have organized. It just comes together that you get a whole load of volunteers and suddenly three of them have got guitars and two have got little drums and we're around a campfire and this impromptu jamming session in nature occurs. And it's magical when it happens, but we won't actually be organizing anything like that until next year. But sometimes they do happen on an impromptu kind of basis of just, it just so happens that there's enough people and the weather's nice enough and then the magic happens.
So how can people get in touch if they want to get involved with Eden Kind, please, Shelley?
So if they go to the website, which is www.edenkind.org, and subscribe, then I send out newsletters. And if they really want to jump in and make themselves known and say, hey, I'm here, what can I do? Underneath jobs and opportunities is an application form. So it's both for volunteers and for what we call sort of tribe seeking. One of the things we've noticed especially because of COVID, is that actually there's a really big network of us all supporting each other doing these grow projects. And it's done online with people that have signed up, and we just we support each other where we are. So it's good to get involved, even if it's just that I can put people in touch with other people in their area to do something similar. Even if it's not coming to join us, I would definitely recommend subscribing.
Well, it all sounds very exciting. I might have to do a little application form there, Shelley. But anyone listening, you know, literally just go online and get involved with Edenkind. It sounds fantastic. And it's nice that you're bringing these opportunities to the people, you know, because we lack them and they're growing now. There's like a movement of these, you know, permaculture sites and rewilding and reforestation. And the more of us tune into it, the more we can grow that. I want to call it the conscious revolution, Shelley.
Oh, I like that. That sounds very good. Conscious revolution.
I feel like there's something positive going on amongst all the darkness, right? Like with the people on the ground throughout history, most of the positive movements have come from the people on the ground. And now people are tuning into nature and finding ways to develop their personal relationship and connect to it more. So,
yes, absolutely. I think we're calling it the evolution. Like you get these revolutions happen when people are unhappy with the government, but that's like revolting against something. I would say an evolution means that we're just all going to be the people we want to be in the communities that we want to have and get on with it ourselves. So, and just leave all the politicians and the gaslighting narcissists to all argue with each other while we just quietly get on with reforesting the earth and living the way we're supposed to.
That's a beautiful, beautiful message to end on. Well, it's been lovely having you on the Environment and Conservation Show. I very much enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. I hope I didn't waffle too much.
Well, you know, it's a radio show, Shelley. So waffling is all right on the radio.
Okay.
Show. So thank you so much for giving your energy to the show.
Brilliant. Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Shelley, for sharing your knowledge and the missions of Edenkind on the Environment and Conservation Show on UK Health Radio. You can find out more about Edenkind via the website. Please visit www.edenkind.org. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. If you are part of any environmental initiatives, projects, campaigns, you've been climbing up some trees and trying to protect some forest somewhere, we would love to hear from you. This is a community platform.
Peace!
There is also a movement now to get gardening as a lesson in schools. How fantastic would that be? It's about developing our personal relationships to nature, to the natural world. Because if you're not interacting with nature, if there's no relationship there, then why would you care about it? It comes from within, you know? And each of us can create our own ripples within that sense. So thank you so much for tuning in, and I hope you can catch me next time.